You are listening to Conversations with me, Pollyanna. 18 and older, please proceed and enjoy. Under 18, listen no further. On today's episode of Conversations with Pollyanna, we feature Susan Wright of the National Coalition of Sexual Freedom, otherwise known as NCSF. Susan Wright founded the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom in 1997 and currently serves as spokesperson and director of incident reporting and response. Susan also serves on the advocacy committees for AASECT, the Kink Clinician Guidelines, the Kink Knowledgeable Program, and the Diverse Sexualities Research Education Institute. She chaired the successful DSM-5 revision project, which helped result in the consensual paraphilias being removed from the paraphilic disorders in 2013. Susan has also conducted 6 surveys on discrimination and violence against BDSM practitioners, consent practices and attitudes, and the mental and physical health of BDSM and non-monogamy practitioners that have been published in the Archives of Sexual Behavior, Journal of Sexual Medicine, Journal of Behavioral Health Sciences and Research, International Journal of Social Psychiatry, Journal of Trauma and Dissociation, and Journal of Homosexuality. Let's begin. Susan, you began the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, otherwise known as NCSF, in 1997 as an advocacy organization originally for the BDSM community and have since expanded as a champion of a variety of sex minority group communities. What inspired you to begin this journey, and what inspires you to continue on into the future?
I was actually doing a project for the National Organization for Women. And they had an anti-BDSM policy, and it took several years of traveling around the country and giving workshops at, you know, local NOW chapters and going to regional conferences and going to the national conference. And in doing that, I networked with a lot of people who were kinky, mainly women, and they kept saying, they'd lost child custody because it was discovered that they were kinky, or they'd lost their job. And so by the time that project was done, it took 3 years. It had only been going for a year and I knew something needed to be done. So I gathered together 5 groups across the country, and I said, why don't we form a coalition and keep this very grassroots so that the groups would control NCSF and be able to tell us what we should do. And of course, one of the big things was child custody. So that was one of the things we've been tackling, and we've had finally a giant change happen with that, with the DSM. So much more now with non-monogamy. It used to be so much with kinky people, but then now that we changed the DSM, so they're seen as not mentally ill, now they're going after the non-monogamous parents, claiming it's in the best interest of the child that they not be in a household with multiple adults. This is a problem for us, and now we're trying to figure out how we can tackle this. One of the things that we're looking at is coming up with a state-by-state a resolution for the family courts so that they understand non-monogamy does not lead to child abuse. There is just no studies on this. Certainly there are studies about adults in the household lead to more abuse, supposedly, but I think that they cannot equate that to non-monogamy, polyamory, where people have a relationship and they're forming a family together. And it often is an intersection, like your non-monogamy, and then you've had to leave your home and move in with, your chosen family, so you may not have a home of your own. So they use those kinds of things, but you've had to change your job. So it definitely is an intersection, and it hits the most vulnerable people.
The National Coalition for Sexual Freedom exhibits at professional conferences like the American Psychological Association and the National Sex Ed Conference. Why is that important?
It's really important for NCSF to educate professionals, because every professional we educate has a ripple effect. There's they impact on people who are kinky or non-monogamous. So we really focus quite a bit on the therapeutic mental health community, because it is so important. And because people need to be able to access therapy where they're not stigmatized, that's the most harmful thing that happens to people, is they go in to try to share what's happening and they get shamed or told they need to fix this aspect of their life. And we also go to like legal conferences as well, because we deal a lot with the laws. I mean, the justice system is broken, and but unfortunately we feel we really need to get in there and keep trying to fix it. So that's why we keep on dealing with legal aspects and asking people to share with us their experience if they do try to report a crime, for instance. And that's why we do a lot of work with victim advocates, because we found there is a system in place to help people deal with the justice system. It's just a lot of people don't know about it. So we educate the victim advocates on how to help people who are kinky or non-monogamous. I just had a webinar last night. We were dealing with victim advocates, explaining what it is. NCSF works with Widener University, and they have interns, and we have like 1 to 3 interns every quarter, and we train them how to train victim advocates and therapists and college administrators. So we're trying to like really broaden what we're doing so that we're educating educators on how to teach professionals. I mean, the professionals are eager for the education. It's just, you know, who's doing the educating. And so that's a big part of what NCSF does. That's what a large part of our budget, because we're all volunteers. You know, we don't have paid staff. We don't produce a conference. You know, we basically go to other people's conferences and provide that education. The National Sex Ed Conference was the other one you mentioned. That's Planned Parenthood. A lot of people from Planned Parenthoods around the country come, and they really are eager for the information that we have to make sure that they're giving out good quality information about consent mainly. Yeah. And it's so important, because you don't want to be shamed for having multiple partners. You want to feel comfortable to be able to describe exactly what's happening to you and be treated in a way that's respectful.
Tell us what you would say are the most pervasive stigmas and stereotypes you find you have to contend with again and again.
Stigma and stereotypes around any kind of sexuality. You know, we live in a country where sex is either a joke or it's used against people. It's sensationalized, and I think that that's the thing I have to say over and over again. And reporters and professionals, they're always interested to hear there is an alternative view, that we are getting a lot more education about what we're doing. We're talking to each other about what we're doing. We're communicating with our partners and creating a deeper level of trust. So presenting that alternative viewpoint is the thing that I've had to continue to do over and over again. And also talking about the fact that because of that stigma, we are discriminated against. And, you know, they think, oh, those people, they're out there having orgies. You know, that's like the stereotype. And it's like, no, we're trying to live our lives and be treated equally. And the problem is because you have this stereotype of who I am, that impacts on me. Some people talk at their work about, you know, having multiple partners. Well, then they're sexually harassed. And that's what we're fighting against. Of course, we're just trying to say, we're not trying to tell everybody to be non-monogamous. Right. You know, we're not telling everybody to give up your beliefs. But we just want you to be tolerant of who we are. And unfortunately, we hear that the person who comes out ends up being the disruption in the workplace. And that's just not right.
Some of my listeners may be surprised to learn that BDSM was once included in the DSM-5. What exactly is the DSM-5? And what was it like to be such a big part of getting that amended?
The DSM-5 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for the APA. And it's the diagnosis of mental health disorders. And the paraphilias have been in the DSM for many iterations. They had like things in the text that ran on from like, you know, people who like to be spanked and flogged and, you know, people who like to dismember people. It was like a run-on sentence of, you know, from spanking to serial killing. And so there was a lot of therapists who misunderstood that, you know, BDSM, people who were consensually kinky, did not have a mental disorder. But even worse was the legal community was just, you know, you would be in a child custody case and they'd go in and they'd just open up the DSM and point to it and say, oh, here it is. You say you're a sexual sadist. Well, you know, this is, you know, you're on the slippery slope, so we can't give you your kids. Or, oh, it says in here you're a sexual masochist and it says you can have other paraphilias. That means you might have pedophilia, so we can't give you back your kids. When we started this latest DSM revision project in 2008, 124 parents came to us for help that year. We really publicized what we were doing. And, you know, we had seen problems all along, but it just really peaked that year. And then last year, it was 18 kinky parents came to us for help. So by changing the DSM and getting them to lay it out, and it was so wild talking to them because, you know, the people who were on the paraphilia subcommittee understood, yes, of course, we're not talking about the kinky people. And so they were kind of shocked that there was this much discrimination happening based on their work. So they really did make an effort to make it clear that people can do these things consensually, and that is perfectly fine. It's when you do it with a non-consenting person or when you do it with a child, like pedophilia, that's when it becomes a mental disorder. There is still a little bit gray area in there. It also says if it's distressing to you. And unfortunately, you know, societal stigma makes it very distressing to somebody. So we're still having to do education around that. But the biggest problem was fixed. And that, it's been, you know, a 30-year effort. We've been working on this. Every time the DSM gets revised, we jump in there. And we're going to have to do it with the next one because, of course, now they're talking about hypersexuality, which could directly impact on people who are non-monogamous. And they use criteria like if you think about sex a certain amount of time, if you have more than one partner. I mean, the things that they, it's like, oh, this is us they're talking about. And we don't have a mental disorder, so we have to keep fighting for, keep those things out of the DSM.
I mean, because I'm a hypersexual. I think about sex every day, you know? I'm crazy for other reasons maybe, but not for that.
and that's not a problem. People
right?
who really think about their sexuality, who communicate about their sexuality, I mean, we're finding that we're a lot healthier, we're a lot, well, better adjusted, we can handle rejection better. I mean, we're well-rounded as individuals, and particularly coming into the communities. And that's why the DSM now says people in community networks, because we at least wanted to make it clear that those people who accessed the community and got the education, those are the people that you should not be harming.
Alrighty, loves, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of this amazing conversation.
We're working on the kink clinical guidelines for therapists, and one of the things in there is the fact that BDSM is not caused by trauma in somebody's past. However, it can be used as a healing process, and certainly you need to be, you don't need to be, I don't want to say that, but it can be very helpful to be working with a professional. If you're going through that, you want to make sure that you don't re-traumatize yourself. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, kinky people, let it all hang out. A lot of times it's like they'll just go right into it and give it a try and then work from there. And as long as there's a lot of communication and you feel a lot of trust, that's going to be a healing experience. I mean, intense experiences can leave an imprint. Mm-hmm. And some people, that's the people who like BDSM, like intense experiences. So it only makes sense that we would seek out something, you know, to kind of help overwrite or change the script. I mean, they say that about nightmares. When you wake up, you're supposed to continue on and, like, change the script. So, you know, why not do that? We like to play with our bodies. Polyamory, I can't even tell which came first for me, being non-monogamous or kinky, because it kind of was simultaneous.
Yeah.
And it really was a very empowering thing for me to realize that I can set my own limits, and I don't have to do what somebody else wants me to do in order to be in a relationship, that I really can define it for myself.
The National Coalition for Sexual Freedom has done so much so far to fight for sexual freedom and privacy rights. What is there still left to do?
There's so much left to do. I mean, we see just by the conservative environment that we're in right now, it is so much more socially conservative, and we're seeing a lot more discrimination. We do direct services to help people when they lose their job or they're having child custody issues. And at the end of the Obama years, it was down to like 120-something, and then it shot back up to like close to 300 in 2018. And it's just because of that us versus them rhetoric that really causes problems for people. They're othered. So we have to continue to make it clear that, you know, maybe we're not the dominant sort of part culture, but then you look at 50 Shades of Grey and look, oh my goodness, that, you know, that best-selling book ever. Clearly, we are part of the dominant culture. We just need to reclaim our spot there. So we have to deal with like the structures, like the legal system, the judicial system. We have to make sure that you know, there is at least one booth at the APA that talks about sexuality, because it's just so ignored. People don't want to talk about sexuality. This whole sex education has become such a hot topic. So we've kind of had to even shift the way we talk about it to talk about consent. And I think that that's actually really kind of helped, because people who are non-monogamous and kinky have been talking about consent decades, many decades. So before we started having this Me Too moment, you know, we've been discussing these things. So we have a lot to teach society.
Absolutely.
States definitely have these old blue laws, they call them, where, you know, they outlaw certain things on certain days. I mean, even it's gets very absurd. The good news is that the sodomy laws were all basically invalidated by Lawrence v. Texas. Lawrence v. Texas is our, you know, Supreme Court huge win, because it really said that privacy rights, we have the right to privacy, that the government really can't intrude into our bedrooms. Now, we haven't been able to build on it too much, but it's there. That's our foundation. So that invalidated a lot of the sodomy laws, which was telling people you can't have a certain kind of sex with people, which is crazy, right? We'll look back on this and go, wow, how could this possibly have happened? So there are still some laws on the books that are a problem, but in Maine, that's been overturned. The biggest issue that we have is the difference between assault and sexual assault. People who are in a BDSM scene and something non-consensually happens, if it doesn't involve the genitals, that's considered assault, which is like being mugged in a bar parking lot. And those prosecutors, they have no idea how to deal with interpersonal violence. It should all be considered under the sexual. At least you would have victim anonymity, things like that. So the laws are really horrible for us in a lot of different ways. But we see glimmers of hope where places that we can try to challenge this, especially based on Lawrence v. Texas. You know, we used to have a lot more trouble with the alleged domestic violence call, we called it. And when we first started, that was the problem, is, you know, family members telling the police, neighbors overhearing, you know, cries, they call the police show up and they have to arrest somebody. We had to do a ton of education of the police departments to let them know, just because this is happening, just because you see a bruise, that is not, that does not indicate that it's domestic violence. And so then the pendulum kind of swung back so far in the other direction that now it's very difficult to get the police to take it seriously if you do have an instance of domestic violence or assault. So, and then you still also have, if an accident happens and say you're doing a knife scene and you cut somebody and they need stitches, hey, that dominant will be arrested if you go to the hospital and say, we were doing a scene and I cut him, because of, it's considered serious physical injury. So in those cases, it doesn't matter. The person who's injured will be like, it was completely consensual, I have no problem with this, and the top will still be arrested for assault. So yeah, it's a mess. And that's one reason why we're trying to work with the ALI, to try to help explain what this is, get this written into it somehow so that it's more clear and understandable. Yes, if somebody cuts somebody and seriously injures them, that's a problem. But that's not, you shouldn't be arrested for assault for that.
Mm-hmm. If it's in a consensual situation.
Exactly, that's an accident. Accidents do happen and people get, you know, kids pull TVs on top of themselves and injure themselves, right? So, I mean, accidents happen and we should have an area where an accident can happen. And we should also be able to report if somebody's raped in a BDSM context and not have the investigators say, well, what did you expect? How can I prove that you consented to this and not to this? It's like, because I have my text messages where I say, I don't want sex, you know? I mean, we've had videotape of somebody saying red, and the prosecutor's like, well, we can't be sure. And it's like, but that's the conventions of our community. We're sure. You know, I hear that, and I know exactly what's happened there. So, yeah, the laws. You know, that's why we work so hard on community accountability, because we really do have to take care of our own people in our own communities. And until this justice system is in a better place where people are treated more equally, I mean, your race matters as well with this. You know, if you're a person of color and you're accused, you know, you're probably in a lot more trouble than somebody who's white. And that is not right. That's what we're fighting.
Susan, please tell us what's next on the horizon for you, on the horizon for the National Coalition of Sexual Freedom.
We are continuing to have our consent summits. And that is regional, where we bring together people of all different backgrounds, victim advocates, therapists, LGBTQ educators, people who understand transformative justice. And so we're holding one in Portland in October. We're holding one in St. Louis in August, and then one in Dallas in February. And it's really wonderful because it's the local community comes together to create these summits. And it's some of it's unconference where we, you know, kind of break away and really brainstorm and talk about it. And I think it's kind of moving the conversation along about consent. The other thing is we've been working on the ALI project. That's the American Law Institute project. And the American Law Institute is revising the Model Penal Code on sexual assault. And when you look at the laws on sexual assault, a lot of states don't even define what consent is. So how can you get justice for something when it's actually written into the law that you have to fight back, or you have to, you know, you have to do a certain thing to express your unwillingness, and you have to prove that you were unwilling instead of them having to prove that they understood that you consented. So we've really helped them craft a definition of consent. It's not fully affirmative consent, which is what I think the kink and the non-monogamy communities believe in, which is you actually sit down and discuss it beforehand. You don't say, may I touch you here? May I touch you here? You know, you talk about it and talk about what your relationship is going to look like and what it is that you each want and what your limits are like. And I think the mainstream looks at that and is scared by that. People are scared because they think that's going to keep them from being able to have sex with somebody. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can just kind of ride that, you know, feel it out, get somebody to have a couple of drinks, and we're finally, as a society, realizing that's not right. That's not right. And it's not right to, you know, have these gatekeepers that, you know, you can trade sex with in order to get what you need for your career. You know, the casting couch was a joke. And I never understood, why is this a joke? Why do people laugh about this? Why do people think, okay, well, you know, that person bought into it. It's like, they had to. They were forced to. I mean, I think it just takes being discriminated against because of your sexuality to realize that it's just kind of a continuum and we're finally facing these issues. So I think that that's more on the horizon, more of that.
For those who want to support the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, what should they do?
Well, NCSF does have on our website brochures about consent in non-monogamy and consent in kink. And groups can get that, individuals can get that for free, you can download it. And we have a lot of facts on our website about consent. A lot of it is to help groups so that they know how to deal with what's happening. And we're really big on community accountability. I mean, we have to be, right? We have to do it ourselves. So definitely check out the NCSF website. There's things on there that you might find really useful.
I'm so grateful that you came today and shared so generously your insights, your experience with us. How can my audience learn more from you and connect with you and follow you?
We're at ncsfreedom.org. We're also NCS Freedom on Facebook and Twitter. We're NCSF. And so we even have an Instagram, which we've just kind of started, trying to put photos up, different consent type things. But yeah, definitely go to our website. That's the big thing for us. We try to put all of our information out there just to open source. You know, people can take it and adapt it as they need to.
Quote, 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 quote me. It's time for the quote of the day, my loves. Quote me. Today's quote of the day comes from Co-Creation. They were featured last week on Tuesday's episode of Conversations, and they sent me an email the other day. Once I debuted the quote of the day, did some social media posts, really cool story, and something I can really relate to. So here is Co's email. Recently, I was having dinner with Jay Wiseman, and this quote came from it. Quote, I never realized I had such an attachment to control until I was forced to truly give it up. End quote. Jay Wiseman. Thinking you might enjoy that? Cheers, Co. I did enjoy that. I'm very type A, and so control is something that definitely I have to be aware of, self-aware of within myself, and something that's something that I battle per se. I mean, we should definitely take all of the aspects of our personality and maybe leverage them as strengths, work with them, maybe do things to mitigate them, keep them from becoming weaknesses, right? And there are certainly times in my life where I think my preference to have control over a given situation, or maybe my abundance of responsibility over things that I'm not necessarily responsible for, I've had to really kind of reevaluate things and make changes because it's been a bit of a detriment for sure. I think in relationships, this really reminds me of a not so long ago revelation that I've shared in some ways with you in the past. And that is that I would ignore red flags. And part of that ignoring red flags in relationships, maybe being forgiving or giving people second chances, seeing the good in them, part of that really was, and I haven't shared this before, was my sense of having responsibility, and which is a controlling thing, for things that I can't control. And that's just kind of the root of my A-type controlling personal responsibility nature. But it's a huge detriment because I would stay in relationships that weren't healthy for me and weren't a healthy choice because of that. It's not all based in bad instincts. Being responsible, taking personal responsibility is important. There's a lot of relationships where I certainly look back and I think, God, I wish my partners had taken more personal responsibility. And maybe the relationships would have worked. Maybe they shouldn't have anyways, so I should consider that as well. Definitely, part of me ignoring red flags was the sense of control. This, I can control things beyond my control, which is an illusion I created in my own mind. This also makes me think of my liking of BDSM. I love power play. BDSM is this huge spectrum. There's so many different ways it can present. So your BDSM, your kink, is probably not going to be the same as mine if it both applies to both of us. That's why, you know, a lot of work in advance. If you meet somebody that you're attracted to and you might both have interest in BDSM, you need to have a lot of conversations and build up to that relationship, because one person's flavor of BDSM is not going to be the same as the others. So for me, BDSM, one of my favorite parts of it is the power play part. And the reason for that is, you'd think, well, if you're such a control freak, Pollyanna, why would you like to give up your control? Because I'm a switch, which I'm leaning more to the side of being submissive. I prefer submissive. I just like my moments where I switch over to a dominant role. And then I like to switch right back to the submission part. That's my own little route that I like. You would think, being a person who is kind of just naturally likes to be in control or take responsibility for things is a much nicer way of saying that, you would think that I wouldn't like to give up that power. But actually, for me, it's a great relief. And a lot of people that are strong women, strong men, that lean toward the side of being more submissive, say this too. It's nice. It's kind of a relief to, it's like a spa day for your personality. You just give up this control for a minute, and it is a bit of a relief. It's kind of this nice break from having to worry and think about things. You get to turn your brain off a little bit and be more and live kind of more on your id instead of your ego. If you're into the psychology of personalities, I minored in psychology in college, and it's always been something that interested me. It's something that saved my life, and so it's had a close place in my heart and something I found just interesting mentally. One of the type of courses I took as many of as I could were courses on psychology of personality. It's something I could just talk to death. I just love it. You talk about your id and your ego, right? So your ego is what keeps you on task. It's probably what you're using when you're at work. as you're getting through your day, staying on track, staying on your schedule. And your id is kind of more your impulse. So that's more your emotions, acting instinctually. For me, my ego's on like most of the time. I like live in my ego zone. So with power play, I get to hop on over to my id, and it's such a relief to turn my ego off for a minute. It's like rebooting your computer sort of thing. So I'm not sure if that's where Jay was going with that, but whether or not you're talking about kind of just your personality and in relationships having to give up control, or if you're talking about a kink and getting into BDSM, talking about power play, it is humbling to give up control. Sometimes it's the right choice to realize it's beyond your control. What is it that they say in the Serenity Prayer? My dad, being Catholic, loves the Serenity Prayer because it derives from Catholicism, but I believe that they use it in Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's, God, give me the power to accept the things that I cannot control, or something like that. I'll post a link to it. I should have researched it before I brought it up, but it's kind of on the fly. And my dad loves that prayer because he's also a controlling person. That's where I get it from. There's a beauty in letting go of control, in picking your battles, and in just letting people have their own free will around you. It's humbling. Sometimes it's necessary. And it reminds us, actually, I think, of our personal power, the personal power we do have, whether or not we have a lot of command in our life and might describe ourselves as being a person who's focused on control, being in control of themselves and in control of the situations they're a part of. And we should focus on it. If you're feeling powerless, gaining control, setting boundaries that empower you is important. Thank you for sharing another amazing quote so I can share with everyone else. Have some words of wisdom that inspire you? Email them to this philosophy-hungry sapiosexual at withpollyanna.com/contact. Quote me. Quote me. The quote. Did you like today's episode? Rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure you check out my website left in the show details, withpollyanna.com, for everything Pollyanna all the time. Want to support what I'm doing and become part of the inner circle? Visit patreon.com/withpollyanna and become a patron. As always, be good to yourself and be good to others. Laters. If you ask, I can share my everything except for where my past been. Passion was less than passive on the path in. Now it's all an act in a bad scene. Jazz swing them hips over here. All the ladies be like, hey. All the fellas be like, hey. Hawk on prayer. I'm a different